don't give him a minute's rest. It's just the way we suspected. Here's a late news flash. For those of you who are waiting for late news flashes, from Jackson, Michigan, a little town residing out there in the great inverted bowl, the dark inverted bowl of the Midwest of these United States. Fire Chief Leo Fox said yesterday that three rubber-padded braziers have been the cause of three fires in the past week. Chief Fox said that in each case, the rubber-based garments retained the heat generated in the automatic drying processes and other processes and set fire to other garments when put in the laundry basket. He blamed spontaneous combustion. Spontaneous combustion. Oh, it's spontaneous as all get out, baby. She's got eyes of blue. I never cared for eyes of blue, but she's got eyes of blue. And that's my weakness now. Ba, 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 ba. She's got dimpled cheeks. I never cared for dimpled cheeks, but she's got dimpled cheeks. And that's my weakness now. Ba, 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 ba. Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, my.
Oh, it should be good.
The following official legislative note comes from the front page of the Congressional Record. For Thursday, January 24th, Senate proceedings, and we quote, Harry F. Byrd, a senator from the state of Virginia, attended today. Well, good for Senator Byrd. We repeat once again from the Senate Congressional Record the congressional recordings of the official proceedings of the United States Senate. A very important news note. Harry F. Byrd, a senator from the state of Virginia, attended today. Thank you, Senator Byrd. We are indebted to you. Oh, Senator Henry F. Byrd, attending the Senate, putting off all them important luncheons, putting off all the important speeches that you were giving everywhere, all them important bits of legislation that you were working on. You, for we, the poor citizens of the United States of America, giving up of your wonderful time, have deemed it possible, have seen your way clear to attend a session of the United States Senate. Senator Harry F. Byrd, we nominate you the American Senator of the Week. By God, with more men like you in the Senate, Harry F. Byrd, this country is not going to be in trouble. A forward-looking, hard-hitting legislature, a man who marches forward with his hand on the throttle, looking forward. Senator Harry F. Byrd, you are there. We want to note with a great deal of humility, this is the third time already this year. Senator Byrd, with men like you, we can sleep easy tonight. Rest assured that there are men who are watching out for the best interest of these United States. Willing to give their all, willing to give their very lifeblood, willing to squeeze the last ounce of energy out of their poor failing bodies. Senator Harry F. Byrd, you stand alone. Senator Harry F. Byrd, we see thee standing high upon the ramparts. Alert, knees ready to spring in any direction. Da 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 da. And now for the special attention for you ladies out there, we have a special cultural note. This is brought to you by the vast WOR personal public service file. WOR once again stands in the forefront of public service. Females who toot trumpets ought to blow their horns in private with mute pleas. Better yet, let them put their musical instruments in mothballs. Sure, it's culture to make sweet music, but trumpet playing something that's strictly for males concludes a new, very official study by way of one of the local colleges. The recommendation for a grand pause among female trumpet blowers is the result of research on women in cultural affairs. The research, conducted by sociology students at Farley Dickinson University in Madison, New Jersey, attempted to determine types of artistic activities appropriate for men and for women to engage in. A group of sociology students interviewed three large groups of people: Farley Dickinson University students, students from three high schools, and 100 husbands and wives residing in a nearby New Jersey town. And we quote, "The only activity in which a majority desired a one-sex monopoly was trumpet playing," the researchers reported in University Woman, a quarterly. "So girls, put aside your B-flat con trumpets. There were seven cultural areas which at least a small minority thought appropriate only for women. These areas: museum work, attending ballet performances, playing the piano, literary club discussions, playing the violin, painting as a hobby, and enjoyment of poetry. However, girls, no more trumpet blowing." All together now, gang. Ho ho, I'm the sheik of Arabia. Ho ho, your love belongs to me. Bing, rink a dink a ding, pow, ba ba da da, row do dee, ba da. It's all right. It's just that I feel rotten tonight. I think you all ought to know that. Speaking of, it's funny how that reminded me of WOR. This is WOR, AM and FM New York. And we'll be here till more scores come on. You see, a lot of you people misunderstand my function here. A lot of you people are complaining bitterly because of the scores. You do not understand my function here. In fact, the function of WOR at this point is to put things on between the scores. And I am not here for me. I'm here to keep the scores from rubbing together. And we feel that we do that admirably. So we'll be here until the next session of Basketball Scores and Late Results. Speaking of late results. Oh, boy, that was the latest result we've had in a long time, Senator Byrd. And we're waiting for the outlying precincts to report in here. While we're on the subject of outlying precincts, I just can't help it. I'm just that way, Bob. Monkey and Winter. Here's an outstanding motion picture from France as provocative as father raves over all French pictures. He's really got a thing going for the French. He must have spent some years there as a student. I watching these two actors knocking their knobby heads together is a pleasure I can recommend, raves Crowther of the New York Times. See, Monkey and Winter present. Oh, oh yes, Crowther, we salute thee. Your unfailing eye, Jean Gabin, your unfailing blink, Jean-Paul Bamondo, your unfailing high cheekbones. Oh, boy, talk about your counterpoint. That's contrapuntal, Dad. What do you mean? You try that, man. It takes concentration, if nothing else. Speaking of concentration, where's that copy for the Met Daily here for the duration of the newspaper strike? Read your favorite columnists in Metropolitan Daily, New York's most complete daily newspaper, published by Town and Village. Milt Gross on sports, Ward. It's Monday. Now the thing to do, of course, is to release the tension. I'm sorry about that that trumpet playing thing, though. You know, I always did get a little itchy, though, when girl trumpet players got up to trumpet. Oh, no, they're terrible. I'll never forget. I used to date a girl trumpet player, and let me tell you, that really produces some wild results. Whew. It's all like practice, I think. They get muscles in the wrong places. It's fantastic. it's really true. I knew a girl one time when I was in high school, and at the time, I was working on the Carnival of Venice. You see, I was a tuba player. And I was working at Carnival of Venice and scenes in the Vienna Woods. I had various other tuba solos that I was playing. And in the next stall, in this little band rehearsals room, was this chick named Rosella. I'll never forget Rosella. Rosella played a con trumpet. Yeah, and she's... Well, one thing about girl trumpet players, they have plenty of lip, but I think there's something else they lack. And now we go on with other things. Oh, you don't know what they lack? Do I have to spell it? Well, everybody's thinking, oh, they're so nice, innocent people. That's what I love, innocent people, Bob. And now tonight's ode to innocence. Tonight's ode to those of you who have to have it all spelled out. I'm the Sheik of Arabia. My love belongs to you. Some night when you're asleep, haul into your tent. I'll creep, creep, creep. All right, that's enough. That'll hold them there for a while. Well, we got other things, too, here. We've just got a few minutes now left before the scores come on. One thing, Bob, you're on TV all the time. You work down there, don't you? If I might just for a moment. Oh, hey, speaking of that, get that thing up there. Anything you want up there. It's just good enough. Anything you want. Do you remember the other day when we did the thing about the practice wedding ceremony that they did in that high school over in Jersey, huh? And I predicted something that would happen. What would be the logical consequence of it, huh? Okay, listen to this. Not more than 2 days later, via the AP, and this comes from the great continent of Europe, Warsaw, a 70-year-old woman rehearsed her funeral by climbing into a coffin in the middle of her room and hanging a mirror over it, the Warsaw Evening Express reported. The newspaper said a mailman entering the room to deliver a pension check fled in horror when the woman got up, quote, and smiled sweetly at him. Oh! Oh, we can only but stand here in awe and salute thee. Hey, that's great. Bring it up again. I'm sitting on top of the world, baby. Oh, I'm just sitting here, right on top of the world. Oh-ho! Rick-a-dick-a-down-o, rick-a-down-o, rick-a-dick-a-dick-a-ding. Rick-a-dick-a-dick-a-ding. Rick-a-dick-a-dick-a-down. Oh-ho! Rick-a-dick-a-dick-a-dick-a-down-o, rick-a-dick-a-dick-a-down. Sure, I tell you, you got to swing with it, man. This is not the McCanns at home. Immediately after we pass the 3 o'clock, we move all the frozen asparagus out of the studio, all the canned peaches. We get rid of all the bohack meat specials. And we move into high gear. Right, Bob? 1, 2, 3. Now, of course, the thing that... I'm torn here between two things. I don't know whether or not to do it or not. I may do this. You're on television. Now, maybe you can tell me something, Bob. I'm watching television the other night, and I see 6 shows. Now, the only show where it didn't happen was Lassie. In all 6 shows, including one old movie that we had here on our station, which we billed as a triumph of neo-European realism. Cut it. Well, six shows I watch, and in six shows, five guys got their chops belted before the show. Now, the question I want to ask is this. This is what I want to ask. How many times in real life have you seen guys belt each other? I'm serious. How many times in real life have you seen guys, all right, five times, but you've lived a lot longer than 1 3-hour stretch on Channel 9? The point I'm making here, that if in all of your life, say you're 35 years old, all of your life you've seen three guys get hit, and most of them when you were a kid. I'm talking about since you're grown up. These are grown up men hitting each other in the face, you know. How many times since you've been a grown up have you seen grown ups belt each other? And what's so fascinating, it's not always two cowboys belting it out, you know, in a bar in Laramie. What's more interesting is Vincent Price will belt George Sanders. Huh, why, yo. And the next thing you know, they're dragging him away. And I never see this in life. I wonder what it is. Do I live in the wrong drawing rooms? Is that it? Do I know the wrong guys? Maybe that's what it is, you know? Maybe that's... Oh, no. I'm sorry. It's all them kind that are hitting each other on TV. See, it's a lot of things. Interesting that people think when guys hit each other, they're virile guys. It's quite the opposite, baby. You got to know that, see? But the intriguing thing is, people sit there hour after hour and invariably, around about right after the second commercial, some guy says, "Why, you, pow!" And then the other guy gets up. Boy, if he ever gets hit a shot like that, forget it. The ball game's over. But no, you hear it go, "Pum!" like that. And he goes, "Shaw!" He slides across the floor, dragging his rented tuxedo behind him, you see. Then he gets up. The other guy charges him with a pow! Down the, pow! They hit each other back and forth. At least three people would get killed every night in one of those, a fight like that. But the intriguing thing is, you never see this in life. I never see that in life. I've been around, you know. Everybody thinks, oh, yes, he has, but you haven't. Once in a while, you'll see one old bum scuffling with another old bum in a rotten bar on 6th Avenue. But what I'm trying to tell you, I'm trying to say among civilized society, which is what they're always showing, you have seen it. Congratulations, honey. I don't know where you see it. Take me there one day. I'd love to see it. No. We're not talking about village parties. You've seen that. Well, then maybe I'm wrong. I have to cross that one off then. I'm wrong. They do fight all the time in people's houses. Yeah, I guess it's her house. That's what I'm saying. The interesting thing now that may be true. Now, all I'm trying to say is that may be true. Now, if what you say is true, Lee, if you do see guys always getting ready to hit each other like that, now I grant you that you might be right about that. Then the thing that I'm interested in is, where are all the rest of us living? I never see that. Now, I'm only saying I never see that. Now, I'm not saying that it is not that way all the time. I'm just intrigued then in that one interesting aspect, the different worlds that other people live in then. Now that's interesting. If you really do, or are you just trying to be funny? You do see that all the time. Every third or fourth minute when a guy walks in with another guy's chick, somebody says, "You, why you?" You know, you see that? Now I'm not saying, have you ever seen a fist fight? That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that under every condition in a TV show, they fight. You, under all certain conditions. In other words, when a certain set of conditions are met, you know the fight's coming. Is it that way in life? Well, that's what I'm trying to say. We will grant you, though, that there are a lot of fist fights in your life. Okay. That's interesting. I mean, I think what I suspect, Bob, is she believes there is. See, now do you see what I'm saying? I'm saying that people will watch this and they will think that's realism because once in a while somebody will shove somebody. That ain't what I'm talking about. I'm talking about this, pow! Down he goes across the room, knocks over the fern, breaks the window, and then gets up and he comes charging in, grabs a bottle, pow! Over the head. Then, pow! If you see that in your life, wow! All I have to say is, man, my life is awful dull. Awful dull. And you know, another thing that I'm intrigued by, and I'll grant you see, that there is a person who believes that obviously for her television is a reality. Now, No, I'm serious. I'm not putting you down. Another question I want to say to you, then, if that's the case, now let's say you watch Ben Casey. Do you believe that every day in a doctor's life, it is nothing but trouble? Nothing but these wild, insane cases where the girl thinks she's 14 elephants, and the next thing you know, she's going to give birth to a camel, and he has to give her, you know, the sedative, and he winds up by stabbing her for her own good. Now, I'm sure, do you see this in your life? Oh, that's just because you don't hang around hospitals. If you did, you would. If you see fistfights like that. Now, I've known you for a long time, and in all the time I've known you, you haven't reported one fistfight. Did they stop when you got to know me? Oh, they're continuing. You just aren't reporting them. I see. Well, I guess padded bras do blow into, burst into fantastic flames. Hold it there. You know, while we're on the subject of realism, I'll have to tell you about the time. This involves a concept of realism. Now everybody sitting out there listening to me on a radio, I trust. I don't know, some of you might pick it up by some fourth dimension. I'm quite sure that judging from some of the letters I get and some of the comments I get and some of the things you hear that I never said. However, I presume that you're listening on some kind of a radio. Well, are you aware? And it wasn't too long ago. Are you aware there was a time when a radio was considered, when they used to make radios as fine instruments, not for example, little transistors, those were junk, little portable radios, the little things, and they made them as a fine piece of equipment. And guys who owned them would treat them as though they owned, say, some 707 computer, some fantastic piece of equipment. And guys used to argue about the relative merits of various makes of radio. Are you aware of this? Like they argue about the relative merits of various makes of car. And there were prestige radios, just as there are prestige cars today. Well, my old man, one time in the middle of the Depression, I'll never forget this, you know, it's just like guys today, when they're really in trouble, often a guy will rush out or a chick will rush out and they will buy some fantastically insane thing that has completely irrational. You know, somebody with 40 cents in his pocket will spend 28 cents of it just to buy bubble gum. You know, some nutty thing like that. Just, well, I wanted it, for crying out loud. You know, just to get it off your skull. Well, in the middle of the Depression, my old man must have been earning about $8 a month. You know, that kind of thing. And I was down in the basement with my kid brother on Saturday mornings. It was a genuine assignment. There was no choice. Saturday mornings, we're down in the basement sifting the ashes. Have you ever sifted the ashes to save the coal out of it? I wonder how many kids have ever done that around town now. And you know, it's funny how many kids today, I'll get a letter from a kid living in Short Hills, New Jersey. Oh yeah, obviously nothing but dough, you see. And he's got nothing but dough. He goes to this fantastic school. They carry him to school. They carry him back. They pet him between classes, you know, and they feed him chocolate milk and the whole bit, see. And the kid will write me this letter. He says, Shepherd, oh, you don't know how rotten it is. Oh, boy, it's rotten. Oh, sick, rotten world. Well, let me tell you, kid. And by the way, this is not one of those nostalgic bits where a guy says, say, kid, if you think you got it tough, you ought to know how I had it. Well, all I could say is that on Saturday morning, I still feel the sickness in me. It was a sick, rotten feeling of a rotten, crummy, stinking job. Every Saturday in the middle of the winter, me and my kid brother would go down to the basement. Now, next to that crummy furnace, now, kid, you probably never saw a furnace. Let me tell you what a furnace is, a great big Frankenstein. It's in the basement. It's got 400 arms. And these arms all stick up and go into the ceiling. It's in the basement. It's dark down there. There are old tires and old footballs and old smelly stuff and dead rats, the whole bit down there. And it's the basement, see? All right, it's dark. There's one little yellow light bulb hanging there. And next to the basement is this pile of ashes. Now, these aren't cigarette ashes, kid. These are ashes that come out of the mouth of that monster. And I can remember at 3 o'clock in the morning, my old man down there, you'd hear, kunk, 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 son of a... You'd hear this fantastic swearing coming out of the registers. You say, it's out again. Why don't you watch the fire when I'm out? They're crying out loud, the fire's out. Why don't you watch it? And then my old lady would go to the kitchen door, holler down the basement, "I did wash it! You left the damper open!" "What do you mean I left the damp?" Clunk, clunk, clunk. Clunk, clunk, boom, bow. Well, then, of course, I'm waking up. And he's hitting it with the poker. All I know is that I'm getting more ashes for Saturday. That's all I could see. More ashes, more crud. And then there was a big handle, see, that came out of the side of this thing. You ever see that big handle? Big iron handle. He would grab a hold of this handle like a big gear shift knob and yank it back. It's shaking, kid, what they used to call the grates. Now, so as he shakes these things, it's shaking the fire. See, and the fire is now a solid lump of nothing. In the middle of it is one little tiny red glowing thing, see? And he's trying to shake all the ashes down there. And in the middle of the ashes are these gigantic clinkers, which are like frozen lava. Big chunks of irons. He's trying to pull the clinkers out, see? Pow! Down it comes. Oh, the grates came down! The grates came down! Will you watch this damn thing? You're letting this thing go out every night! I'm going out of my skull! Well, that's the way it would go down in the basement, see? Well, let me tell you, the basement is a wild place. So on Saturday morning, next to the furnace is a pile of ashes that's about waist high, see, and it's about as big around, I'd say, as the average ping pong table. Great big pile of ashes. Well, then what we would do, we'd take a great big tub, me and my kid brother, see. Oh, boy. We'd take a great big tub. We had two big wash tubs. And we would put over the top of the tub a rack. This is a big frame-like. And in the frame, in the middle of the frame, is a net. It's just a wire grating, you see. It's really just like a big tea strainer, see. And you would shovel a shovelful of ashes into this thing. You'd have about three shovelfuls. And my kid brother grabbed one hand of it. He'd grab a hold of one end of this thing. And I'd grab them. We'd shake. We're shaking the ashes down, see, through this grate. Well, of course, this stuff is rising. The crummy ashes are rising. And my mother, about every 30 seconds, would open the door and you'd hear her holler down, "Now don't cheat! Now don't cheat! We've got to have the coal. It's got to last till Wednesday." Well, we shake. We have to go through this whole pile, and as we would get the little residue on the top, that is theoretically what will burn again, you see. That's the unburnt stuff. We would pick the little pieces of clinker out of it, throw those away, and there would be about 19 pieces of that little coke, you know, that stuff that's kind of baked, and we would put that into the other tub. Well, we would continue this laborious, rotten, crummy, dusty, cough-making procedure. This would go on, it would seem like forever. And we'd hear the guys outside, "Hey, Flick, come on, throw it over here, Flick, come on, let's go." And we're down there crumbling around with the ashes. I don't know when these other kids did the ashes, but I know they did it. I wasn't the only guy, see, we did it. And once in a while, some guy, "Hey, Shepherd, come on, will ya?" Said, "Well, I got the ashes." Oh. Well, that was the end of it. You know, they knew what the ashes were because they were all involved in the same crummy, rotten fight. So we'd shake this stuff all up, you know. Finally, we'd have it all out. See, the whole object was to get the ashes out in the alley, the burnt stuff. So we'd get it all loaded up there out in the alley. We'd come back in. We have our lousy little tub of leavings. You see the coal. We would carry it over to the big pen there. We had the old ash bin there. What they call? Oh, the coal bin. Yeah, we'd carry it over to the coal bin and dump it in. Oh, we're done. Oh, boy. And you got dust in your eyes, you got crud in your throat, and you got blood in your heart. Let me tell you, you have formed an eternal hate for internal or any kind of combustion, for that matter. Any kind of fires today, even at this day, I immediately, when I see a tavern burning down on 6th Avenue, I immediately think of sifting the ashes. I got to sift in the ashes for the coal, you know? I got to sift in the ashes for the coal. And here's what used to happen then. This old burned-out, crummy stuff, this was always the payoff. My father would take a shovelful of this crummy stuff, see, and he would throw it into the fire. Well, this stuff is really actually all burnt. It's just practically burnt, you know, it's just sort of hanging there. And in about 25 minutes, he has got a clinker that's the size of a basketball. from the stuff we saved. And by Wednesday night, it would start all over again. You'd hear about 3 o'clock in the morning, he'd come home from bowling, and the first thing he did when he got home from bowling was to go over to the hot air register to see if there's any breath coming out. Oh! You'd hear, and then you'd hear, plump! Down would go, then you down in the basement frantically. He's going to try to get it before it goes out. Boom! Open goes the door. You'll let the fire go out again! What the hell is this? Every night I come home from bowling, the fire's out. You let the fire go out. What the hell is this? Gunk, 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 gunk. The next time you leave the fire go out, you're going to have to fix it yourself. When you turned off the damper before you left. What do you mean I turned off the damper?